Okay, so we're here in the beginning of chapter 2 of Megillas Rus. We're up to verse 2, I believe.
Yeah.
I think last week we spent most of our time on verse 1.
Yeah.
And now we move on to verse number 2. Pasuk Beis. So let's stick my notes over here. So let's read it together. So it says, Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, let me go out to the field and glean among the ears of grain behind someone in whose eyes I shall find favor. Go, my daughter, she said to her. So now they get back to Israel, and they're very poor, and they need to have some food. So the question arises, who's going to be the one to go out and collect food? Now there's a halakha called leket, which will be the focus of this chapter. Leket means that grains that are dropped during the harvest process are left there to be gifts to the poor. So they figure, we're going to go out, and we're going to collect leket, because we're poor, we have no food to eat, and this is how we'll eat. We'll eat leket, and we'll survive in that way. So Ruth says, I'll go out to do it. I'll do the hard work. Naomi was already an older woman at this point. Ruth was a younger lady. She went out to collect the leket. And she said, I'm going to find a field where I find favor in somebody's eyes. And Naomi said to her again with this endearing tone of, BT, go out, my daughter. Mm-hmm. So they have a very loving relationship. It's very, very clear. And she calls her my daughter. Please go out. Now it's very interesting because we mentioned in the first verse that Boaz was a cousin of Naomi. Boaz was a family member. And Boaz was wealthy, Boaz was powerful. Why didn't this go to his door, knock on the door and say, hi Boaz, we're back here in Beis Lechem, we need some food, we're very poor, can you help us out? But they avoided that route, and instead they decided to go and collect the gifts for the poor, leket, instead of going to Boaz's door. It's a very interesting thing why that was.
Did he know who they were?
He knew, yeah.
He certainly
heard they came back.
Because he said to her later, I heard that.
Right, correct. Right, he knew they came back, and he knew that this was his family. I mean, he knew the family connection that was there. It was his first cousin, Naomi. Elimelech was his uncle. So they really could have gone to Boaz's door and asked for help, assistance. But they avoided taking that route. And Boaz was a very righteous person. We'll see how kind he was to Ruth later on in this chapter. He would have for sure helped. But they didn't want to do that. So I think the answer is very, very simple, based on what we discussed last week. There is a concept that we don't want to benefit from other people's money. To go and ask for handouts, number one, it's not dignified. You feel that you're kind of, you know, you don't feel your own self-worth. You feel humiliated. And plus, you know, you don't want to get freebies. Collecting from leket is a gift that Hashem gave to the poor. This is a much more noble way to collect tzedakah, as it were, than knocking on the door and asking for handouts. Leket, Hashem says, there's certain things that every single poor person has rights to. Leket, shechcha, peah, things that are forgotten in the field, things that are dropped in the harvest, the corners of the field, other examples as well. So that's a much more dignified way to survive if you're poor. If you have to knock on a door and say, I'm poor, please help me out, that's much more difficult to do. So they didn't want to do that, and they also didn't want to have to take from him any freebies. Leket's not a freebie when Hashem says, this is yours, this belongs to you. You're not asking someone to give it to you, it's already left for you. It's a very different approach.
So why couldn't she go directly to Boaz's field for the leket? Why did she have to talk to him directly?
She didn't talk to him.
No, but saying you said she didn't want to get a freebie, but she could have gone to Boaz's field instead of someone else's field.
Well, I guess she didn't want any special treatment either. If she sent Ruth to go to Boaz's field, she knows once Ruth is there, she'll get the special treatment.
Oh.
So I want you to just go to any field you can find, collect leket, you know, lay low, and do it in a very, very humble way. And we'll get what we need from God. That's what they felt. It's a lesson to us also. No, we all love freebies. You know, it's the American way to love freebies. You know, anything free we can get, we try to get. And from a Torah perspective, you know, we feel it's very important to earn our keep. You know, that what we have, we should earn, we should deserve, we should work hard and get. When freebies come our way, I mean, you're allowed to take them. It's not a problem. But from the larger perspective, you know, it says Soni Matanos Yechia, the one who hates gifts will thrive, will survive. And we shouldn't want freebies. We should want to be able to earn our keep. Because what really we work for and we accept, that's ours. That's what we deserve. That's what we've earned. Freebies means that we have to be dependent. And we don't want to be dependent. We don't want to have things that don't really belong to us. So this is a lesson from Ruth and Naomi. Despite that they were so poor, they don't want to get any freebies. Leket is okay because God says leket is yours. But to have to go and ask for handouts, they didn't want to get involved in that. Yeah.
I know the pasuk makes a point of telling us that it just happened that she came to Boaz's field.
Yes, yeah, right. That'll be the next pasuk, correct.
I don't think she knew that she'll go to Boaz.
No, she didn't. She said, I'll go to any field I can go to that they treat me nicely.
The whole book is...
Or they accept me.
Yeah, the whole book is showing the Ashgacha.
Right, exactly, certainly. But this is the idea of Sonim Atanas Yichya, the one who hates gifts, should survive. We know we say, Baruch HaGever Shevzach B'Hashem, blessed is the one who trusts in Hashem. If we're forced to take tzedakah, we have to trust in human beings. And that could get in the way of our trust in God. So and sometimes people have to take tzedakah, unfortunately. But if it can be avoided, if there's other means of making a living, whether it be the concept of leket, whether it be taking on some menial job, etc., that's far preferable from a Torah perspective than living off of tzedakah, that's for sure. So, yeah.
The verse, just looking at the verse we have right here instead of jumping ahead, what does she mean, behind someone in whose eyes I shall find favor?
I mean, she wanted to be treated nicely, or she wanted to be accepted. I mean, she was somebody who they rejected based on her background. And she knew that when she ventures out to the field, people are going to mistreat her.
Yet.
What?
I don't recall her being rejected.
Well, not yet, but she knows she will be. And she will be later on. I think she we haven't seen it in this story quite yet. Mm-hmm. But I think she recognizes, based on her background and the controversy that revolves around her, that she may be mistreated. So she says, wherever I can find favor in someone's eyes, I'll go there to collect my lesson.
Halakhically, she is Jewish. We decided she was Jewish.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so she's entitled to life.
She's entitled to
it. It's not a known fact to everybody.
Right, it's not a known fact, right. There is some discussion as to when the actual conversion took place. It could be it was later on. Some commentaries might say it's later. The simple understanding is that it was already occurred before. Simple understanding.
Before they came here.
Before this point. When they first came back to Israel, that was when the conversion occurred. Again, some commentaries say it actually occurred later on in the book. But we'll assume it occurred already for our purposes. So Ruth went. She was a single girl. She was taking a risk about being mistreated based on her background, based on her status. She didn't want to be in any way tormented by all these young men in the harvest and in the field. But she said, I have to go out and feed my mother-in-law, so I'm going to do whatever I can to take care of her. So that's the end of verse 2. Verse 3. So she went. She came and gleaned in the field behind the harvesters, and her fate made her happen upon a parcel of land belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. So as we pointed out before, she did not intend to go to his field. I mean, probably Nami would have told her not to go to his field because she didn't want him to give any special treatment to Rus and to Nami. However, as the pasuk says, "Vayikar mikreha." No, her happenings happened upon. In the translation, her fate made her happen upon a parcel of land. So when we say she happened upon it, in translation, that means it was hashkacha. It was divine providence leading her to the right place. God has His ways to bring out the results He wants. And we don't always understand how God does that. We know we have free choice, and we know that things happen around us based on what we choose. But when God has a plan, that plan does come out into fruition. And many of the things in life that we feel are mikra, just are our fate or our happenings, really that was God moving around the right pieces in order to get you to where you need to go. God right now is trying to set up the birth of David Melech King David and the Mashiach. That's the larger picture here in Megillas Rus. And to do that, she has to somehow interact with Boaz. And this whole story has to take place between Rus and Boaz. So even though she could have landed in many, many fields out there in Beis Lechem, she ended up in Boaz's field, which happens to be the right place at the right time, as it were, to bring her to connect with this great man, which will ultimately be her husband. So that's the idea of Yikar Mikreha. And the sages put it that, an angel guided her, because there are many ways you can describe it, but she got guided there somehow, based on divine providence. It wasn't just good luck that she ended up in the right field. The Malbim, he looks at the word mikreha. Mikreha, we mean her happenings or her fate. Meaning God has happenings for every person individually. It doesn't just happen. Everyone has their own individual happenings because God is setting them up in that way. So it doesn't just say that she happened upon the field. It means her happenings happened upon the field because it's unique to her. Because she was somebody who God was guiding towards that field. It's also interesting, it says that she was collecting, the wording used is that she gleaned behind the harvesters. So commentaries point out that the most effective way to get leket would be to be right there amongst the harvesters. Mm-hmm. I mean, as soon as they drop it, you grab it. Leket means whatever they drop while they harvest. But Rissa remained kind of back, you know, behind the scenes.
Tzniut.
And the reason being was her modesty, right? The tzniut, you know, tznius. She didn't want to be there amongst all these, you know, strapping young men who were harvesting the field. She was a young single woman, so she stayed kind of in the background. And even though it may have been at the expense of some extra grain she could have collected, she says, it's more important for me to maintain my standards of morality and my standards of tznius, of modesty, than to get involved right next to all these young men in the harvest. So she stayed kind of behind the scenes, remained kind of subtle and hidden, so that she can maintain her standards of modesty. Let's look at verse 4. Behold, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem. So the word behold in Tanakh means something here was surprising. Now, Boaz didn't usually arrive in the middle of the harvest. I mean, Boaz was somebody who was very wealthy. He was considered with the Gadol Hador, the greatest leader of the generation. He was a judge in the Sanhedrin. He was the shofet. So he doesn't usually just pop in at the harvest just to say hi. And not a normal thing he would do. He trusted his harvesters. These are his fields. But the fact he arrived on this day also was part of the divine plan, because it wasn't typical for Boaz to arrive at the harvest. And had he not come, he wouldn't have noticed Rus, and the story wouldn't have taken place as it took place. So behold, he arrives, and he greets the harvesters. Hashem be with you. And they answered him, may Hashem bless you. So this is also a very, very important point, which I want to discuss a little bit. The number one, just think about the way Boaz greeted everybody. Boaz had these simple farmers working there in his field. He'd just say, how are my grains doing? You know, how much did you get today? You know, what are the profits? Show me. He didn't just say hi. He gave them this warm, special blessing. He said, Hashem be with you. That's the way that he greeted just the simple farmers. Hashem be with you. You can imagine how that made them feel. You know, the joy, the recognition that they received from Boaz was something which really inspired them. It made them feel great to work in his field and be connected with such a great man. But beyond that, the Mishnah sees a very important point from here. The Mishnah Maseches Brachos tells us that this verse introduces to us the concept that you can greet somebody using God's name. I mean, he used God's name, not just Hashem, he actually pronounced God's name in the way we don't pronounce it. He pronounced God's name to greet his harvesters. So the Mishnah says that from here we see that you're allowed to greet people using the name of God. And further than that, the sages tell us that this is actually a concept that the Sanhedrin had decided on in this period of history. I mean, until that point, everyone was nervous to use God's name just in my everyday greetings, because it's like you're using God's name in vain. Like, why should I use God's name just to greet you? The Sanhedrin decided, Boaz included, that the appropriate thing to do on this point in history was to start greeting everyone with God's name. And the question is why? Like, what was the point of that? Why was that so important? The Sanhedrin had to convene a meeting and legislate this rule that everyone is allowed to and should greet using God's name. The truth is, nowadays, we don't typically say God's name in greetings, but even the word shalom actually is the name of God. Mm. So the truth is, every Jewish greeting of shalom, shalom aleichem, is actually invoking God's name. And the Gemara says one of God's names is shalom. You shouldn't say the word shalom in a bathroom, because shalom is one of God's names. So, which if, you know, if you're Israeli and speaking Hebrew in a bathroom, it might be a little bit challenging to say hi to somebody. You have to say, you know.
Baruch haba.
Baruch haba, right. But,
Mashalom for Brichas Torah, a lot of people mistakenly think you can't say good morning.
Right, right. That's a different issue. Right.
You can't say Shalom Aleichem, but right. You can say good morning.
Right. You're not supposed to, in the morning before you daven, you're not supposed to say Shalom Aleichem to somebody, because it's like you're using God's name to greet before you've actually spoken to God. You want to speak to God first, then you can use God's name to greet others. So you can say good morning, because you don't say God's name when you say good morning.
Same as Bincha, same as Ma'ariv.
It's only in the morning, because you haven't, the whole day you haven't yet.
I see.
Yeah.
This phrase, Hashem Imachem, even today the Sephardim use this when they go up.
To the Torah.
To bless the Torah.
Right.
That's the first words.
Hashem Imachem. Right. Right. Yeah, that's true.
And they say the name of God mamash, like Adol.
So Boaz felt, and his Sanhedrin, all the judges of the time felt, that it was very important for this lowly generation to use God's name more in their everyday speech. I mean, we introduced the book of Rus a few weeks ago, that the time of history for the Jews was not a very positive time. The people were serving idols, they were becoming very materialistic, a lot of anarchy was occurring, there wasn't one leader who was guiding the Jews. So the Sanhedrin had to convene and figure out, what can we do? What would be the right method in order to help these Jews get back on track? And one of the rules they came out with was, let's introduce God's name in everyday greetings. Mm-hmm. That's what they did. And the idea is that, you know, when people speak more about God, you feel God's presence more in your life, and therefore you think twice before doing things which are inappropriate. Now, when God's not on our everyday speech, so then we can push God, the idea of God, off, you know, into the back of the files in the brain and not think about God too often. But if you're constantly speaking about God, if you go to work and everyone says, may God with you, you know, God should bless you, and that's the conversation you have in the beginning of your day at work, so then at that point, God is on the mind, and God becomes more part of daily life. And that is the power to really help a person have control and to bring God into everyday activities. So the truth is, you know, many people, they shy away from talking about God too often in everyday speech and conversation, especially in the secular world or amongst, you know, colleagues in the workplace, something along those lines. But Boaz is teaching us a lesson. It's very important that we, as committed Jews, we include God in our everyday speech. We know there's a very famous example of this, which is Yosef. Yosef, when he was sold to be a slave in Egypt, so it says that his master saw that God was with him, and everything he did, God would give him success. So Rashi asks the question, how did the master see God was with him? He wasn't doing any miracles or anything. It wasn't like he was floating or, you know, wasn't turning water into blood. Like, how did he see God was with him? Maybe he's just a very good worker. And Rashi says, because Yosef was somebody who had Shem Shemayim Shagor Befiv, the name of heaven was fluent in his mouth. So Yosef, every single day when he would go to work, he would constantly be discussing God. He would talk about God. So they'd say, hey, Yosef, can you please go in and draw some water for us? He'd say, with God's help, no problem. You know, Yosef, can you be there at dinner tomorrow night to clean up after we eat? Yeah, God willing, I'll be there. And Yosef was constantly discussing God. Yosef, how are you doing? Thank God, I'm doing fine. And because that was in his daily speech, and he was so successful, they knew this person wasn't successful because of his own personal merit. It was because God was with him. Mm-hmm. I assume Yosef found this to be so important because since he was isolated from his family and from the rest of the Jewish people, he had to maintain his connection somehow. So Yosef made it a point to make sure God was part of his daily life so he didn't forget about God. I think that's why Yosef would have done it. But everywhere Yosef went, Rashi says, the Midrash says, he was Malachish Nichnas. He would constantly be whispering to God, praying to God, talking about God. God was on his tongue. You find this also with Avraham Avinu. Avraham, it says, V'yikra sham b'shem Hashem kelim. Avraham would call out in God's name. So one explanation of this is that Rashi says that he put God's name in the mouths of every single person, which means when they interact with Avraham, he would talk about God so much, they'd recognize God as well. So there's really two parts of talking about God more often. There's for ourselves, that we look at God as reality in our lives, and it's for others that they should see that God is reality in the world. So it's good for both reasons to talk more about God. So it's important that we do have God's proper lexicon. So, you know, many Jews are very accustomed to saying, you know, Baruch Hashem or Mirtz Hashem, you know, thank God, God willing. So that's a very positive thing in that it makes God more reality in our lives. The flip side of it is, do we ever think about the term as we use them? If we say, I'm doing good, thank God, I'm doing good, Baruch Hashem, do we think what we're actually saying? Because sometimes the real power of that statement is that I really think for a second, thank God, I'm doing okay. You know, if I actually think about it that way, then I'm really accomplishing this goal of bringing God into my daily life. You know, can you be there tomorrow for our meeting? You know, Mirtz Hashem, God willing, I'll be there. So if we thought twice, yeah, God, if God wills it, I'll be there. We have to really think what we're saying. But if we do that, it actually is a very powerful tool to help us become more connected and more engaged with God. So Boaz understood, what's the key to get this generation back on track? He didn't make any major new laws or prohibitions or fences around the Torah. What he said is that we have to bring God into the picture of daily life. We have to make sure that God is part of our discussion. And therefore, if we can bring that in, it'll make a big difference to the people, and they will have much more of a connection, have more self-control, act in a more ethical, honest, and moral way because they're talking about God. You know, it's very hard to cheat somebody, you know, in a business, if they walk in and say, how are you doing? Thank God I'm doing fine. Then I'm going to cheat you. Like, yeah. You know, if you're really thinking about what you're saying, it's very hard to do that. So this is part of the wisdom of Boaz and the Sanhedrin, that they, a very, very slight idea, they're able to bring into Jewish culture and Jewish life, which has the ability to really change around all the corruption, all the dishonesty, all the immorality which was there, and really hammer home to us the presence of God in our daily life. So this is the way that Boaz agrees. So Boaz comes in, he's, you know, fresh off the Sanhedrin's new rule, and he says, may Hashem be with you. And they'll answer, may Hashem bless you. And that was the greetings which happened between Boaz and his workers. So if that's the way that people talk to each other, then it's very, very hard not to follow in God's ways. we wish our conversation could be more sincere like that, you know, understanding God's presence. Let's go to verse 5. Boaz then said to his servant, who was overseeing the harvesters, to whom does that young woman belong? So Boaz came in and he noticed an interesting young lady out there in the field. So it could be it was uncommon for women to be collecting leket. That's what some commentaries say. Usually men went out there. But women are allowed to collect leket the same way men are allowed to collect. So it shouldn't be too surprising. Some say that he noticed that she was a little bit different looking, and she was Moabite, so he might have been dressed in Moabite clothing, so she may have appeared different. But Rashi tells us they noticed something a little bit more elevated about the way she acted. Rashi says that she acted with chachma, with wisdom, and with tznius, and with modesty. And Rashi explains that she was following the proper halachas of how to collect leket exactly to the T. A lot of people who went out there to collect leket may not have known the exact rules, may have taken things they weren't supposed to take or left things behind they were supposed to take. Ruth knew exactly what she was doing. And number two, she collected with modesty. She didn't bend over in any compromising way. She made sure that when she collected the leket, it was collected in the most modest of ways. So she would you know, maybe go down on her knees to pick it up rather than bend over, but she would not put herself in a position that would have attracted the men to stare at her. That's a Boaz notice. So Boaz says that she's somebody who is acting a little bit different than the rest. You know, she was keeping to standards of halacha and of tznius and of modesty, which were going far beyond the other ladies at the time. So that caught his attention. I mean, I guess to convert, she does have to learn the law. So I mean, at that point, when Nami said, go out to collect, she said, what do I do? You know, because she wanted to do it right. And she was very sincere Gioris, and she wanted to make sure she did it all right.
So the question is, what was Boaz looking at? How did he even notice this? I mean, this is the guttle of the door.
Right.
I
well, that's exactly Rashi's point.
Lean on the glasses and things. You know?
That's exactly what Rashi says. Was it Boaz's way to stare at the young ladies? That's what Rashi asks. And the answer is, well, this caused tension because she's acting differently than everyone else. Oh. If she was your standard lady, he wouldn't have looked at her. But because she was acting in a very different way, it caught his attention more so than the rest. That's the question Rashi's addressing with this. Mm-hmm. Exactly. The Dumno Magid, who is much more recent commentary, but you know one of the famous great speakers amongst the Jews, he said that, what did he notice? Said that he noticed that there is an act of divine providence occurring over here. I mean, Boaz sensed something different in that, you know, the fact this girl is here is abnormal. And when something abnormal happens, and you're the Gadol Hador, and you're somebody who's in tune with the needs and the situation of the Jewish people, you see that God is having something here. I'm not sure what quite yet, but he knew that God is working on something by having this girl left in this field. He knew that. So he definitely noticed something different about her, whether it be the divine providence, the modesty, the wisdom, or just her dress and her appearance. But he said, who is this girl? And when he says, to whom does that young woman belong, he was assuming that she was married, is what it sounds like. So the answer is, she is a Moabite girl, verse 6. The servant who was overseeing the harvesters replied, the one that returned with Nami from the fields of Moab. So the supervisor who's overseeing all the harvest tells Boaz, this girl is the girl that came back with Nami. So Boaz knew Nami, and this story had already become famous in Beis Lechem. I mean, we know when they came back to Beis Lechem, the Pasuk told us that everyone was astonished to see them, and everybody spoke about it. It was a big deal. It was in the news. Everyone's gossiping about, you know, what happened to Nami, and this girl came back with her, what happened to the family. You know, it was big news in the city. So when the harvester told Boaz, this is the girl that came back with Nomi, he knew exactly the story. He knew exactly what was happening here.
But they also disrespected the Moabite girl.
Yes.
Like, she's not worth something.
Right, correct. But Boaz didn't, but everyone else did.
Moabite.
Right. So he was a Moabite girl. Right, exactly.
Girl.
Yeah, Boaz can show her the utmost respect, but everybody else, yeah. Exactly. So the Boaz at this point, he understands the whole situation. Number one, he just came back from meeting the Sanhedrin discussing, you know, the low level, the morality, the depravity of this generation. He just is trying to bring the Jews back to a higher level, bring God back into daily life. He sees this girl who seems to be keeping standards beyond all the other Jewish girls in the area. And then he hears, this girl is the girl that came back with Nami from the land of Moab. He puts it all together and he says, okay, I got to go talk to her. This is a very significant point, and I have to go and show her the greatest of kindness. Now we know that Nami is trying to avoid the situation, because she didn't want Boaz to start handing out freebies, right? But God had it that as much as Nami tried to avoid this occurring, it occurred anyways. So, and the verse continues. This is still the quote from the supervisor. And she had said, I mean, the supervisor is telling Boaz the attitude that Ruth has. She said, please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters. So she came and has been on her feet since the morning until now, except for resting a little bit in the hut. So she's been working very hard all day diligently to get enough leket to feed herself and her mother-in-law. So now at this point, Boaz is aware of the entire story. He understands the diligence involved. He understands, you know, why she's acting the way that she is. She's a very righteous woman who gave up everything to come back to join the Jewish people. And now he goes to speak to her. So in verse 8, then Boaz said to Ruth, hear me well, my daughter. Do not go to glean another field, and don't leave here, but stay close to my maidens. Keep your eyes on the field which they are not harvesting, and follow them. I have ordered the young men not to molest you. Should you get thirsty, go to the jugs and drink from what the young men have drawn. So Boaz gives her the special attention. The first thing to notice is the way that he addresses her. He says, again, Biti, my daughter. It's a term we've seen a few times now in the book of Rus, but it's a powerful term, because imagine her feeling. You know, she feels like an outsider, a foreigner. She's a Moabite convert. She's been rejected. People are mistreating her. It sounds like the men want to molest her. And the Gadol Hador, the greatest rabbi of the whole generation, comes to her and says, my dear daughter, let me take care of you. And imagine how that lifts her spirits. That one word of BT, how much is included in that phrase, how much warmth and how much respect Boaz had for Rus is there. She's this poor convert with the background of hers, and she gets addressed by this great, great person. It sounds like she had thoughts of leaving the field, because he told her, don't leave. So it could be that she felt, I've had enough here. People are not treating me nicely. I can find another field where I find grace in the people's eyes. But he told her, don't leave, stay close to my maidens, and watch the field. Keep your eyes in this field, and you're going to see a lot of leket is going to come your way. And I'm going to tell all the men not to go near you, not to bother you. And if you get thirsty, usually if you're poor and you're thirsty, you'll have to go draw water from the well. But he tells her, don't worry about the well. You go and take their water, right? They have water over there. Don't worry about them. You can take their water, enjoy. That's the clean water. It's fresh. It's ready to go. And you're getting special treatment. That's what he tells her. So Boaz, because he sees the divine providence situation, because he knows who Ruth was and that God brought her to his field, he gives her this special treatment, which he feels she deserves. He's telling her, Hashem has led you here. Don't leave my field. You're in the right place. You've come to the right place. I'm going to take care of you. God put you into my hands. There's a quote that we say that, you know, the idea of mikra, happenings, are the language of divine providence. You know, the fact you happen into my field, that's God speaking. I can hear God in this whole story. And therefore, I want you to stick around, and you won't be mistreated anymore. They're going to treat you nicely, and you'll collect in my field. We find a similar wording in the story of Eliezer, Abraham's servant, when he goes to find a wife for Yitzchak. And he goes to the well, and he's looking for a wife for Yitzchak, and he davens to Hashem and says, Hashem, hakreina lefanai, may she happen before me. Obviously, there's divine providence in the fact that Rivka arrives at the well just as Eliezer arrives at the well. But Eliezer, he davens to Hashem, he prays, and he says, Hashem, please have her happen before me, and then he's going to see the divine providence in that. So it's really a very similar concept, that people are kind of showing up, you know, in your sphere, especially at times like this, when you're looking for something, or when you have a need, when you're on a mission. That is God speaking to you and telling you that this person is here for you. Situation is designed in order to fulfill what you need to accomplish. So that is verse 9. Let's look at verse 10. So let's see how Rus reacts. Then she fell on her face, bowing down to the ground. So she bows down to Boaz and said to him, why have I found favor in your eyes that you take special note of me, that I'm a foreigner? So she is so humble. She says, I don't understand. Why are you treating me like this? You know, I'm just a regular girl, you know, doing my thing. I'm a poor lady. I'm a foreigner. Why do I get special attention from you? And this shows us how humble she was. She doesn't see, in all of her great actions we've been describing, she sees it as like normal everyday life. She left her family and her friends and her background to go with her poor mother-in-law to join the Jewish people. She's out here doing chesed to take care of her mother-in-law. She's somebody who made an astonishing switch in her life to become Jewish. And she makes nothing of it. She says, I don't understand why you're treating me any different than anyone else. I'm just a foreigner. I'm merely a Moabite girl who came to join the Jewish people. That's all I am. Why do I get that treatment? And Ruth clearly was overwhelmed with gratitude. She bows down to him and says to him this idea. And she denies, you know, anything great that she did. and she sees the kindness which is there. There's a very important word which is used. We lose some of it in the English. I mean, the English translates it as to take special note of me. In the Hebrew, the word is lahakireini. You've recognized me. So she could have focused on the fact that he's giving her food and water. He's going to allow her to collect the leket and feed her and na'ami. But she stresses that you give me recognition. Because we know that very often, the food and the drink are not the primary thing that people who are needy actually need to get back on their feet. Very often, it's because people are lacking in their own self-worth. They're down, they feel demoralized, they feel empty. And to have somebody come over and just recognize them and tell them that I care, I value you, I care about you, I understand that you're somebody who's special, you have a lot to offer to the world, that can mean much more than the money or the food or the drink sometimes. You know, when somebody comes and needs tzedakah, so they do need money and they need help, but very often the kind word and the smile and the encouragement and the recognition of a person, of a human being who has needs and who's special and unique in their own way, can go much further than the money or the food which you give them. And we miss that sometimes. Especially we can't give so much money. Not always have a lot of money to give, but we can always give a good smile, we can always give attention, we can always give our support and our encouragement. That we could always give. And Rus valued that, it seems, even more than the food. Lahaki Raini, you've recognized me, you've lifted me up from all the other people, all the other girls, and give me this special appreciation, special attention, which makes me feel so much more dignity and self-worth than I had before. And this is what she felt.
Maybe this is how Gerim feel. That's why it says so many times, you have to mess a Ger.
Right, they can really feel like outsiders. That's a very good point.
Feel like
right, your typical Ger, they do feel like outsiders. You know, they're entering into a very established community from nowhere. And just to give them that hakar, that recognition that we value your sacrifices and we see who you are, that goes a long way. There's a very famous drasha, a very famous explanation that Chazal give to Pasuk and Parshas Vayechi. It says in the bracha to Yehuda, it says, Lavei shinayim mechalav, that your land will be so prosperous that your teeth will be white from milk. And the rabbis tell us that you can read that verse, Liben shinayim mechalav, meaning that the white of teeth is greater than milk. Meaning that sometimes, more than the milk which you give, it's the smile that you give. When you give them the white of your teeth and you smile at somebody, that can be much greater than a cup of milk. So Rabbi Victor Miller, when he would describe this explanation, he would always say, let's think about milk for a second. You know, milk is filled with calcium and protein, and it quenches your thirst, and it's something which really can give you so much nutrition. Milk's an incredible drink. But the white of the teeth, the smile, goes even further than that. And that's the concept. Russ here felt not the milk, she felt the smile. That's what she was feeling right now. Yeah?
I like the sense of the irony, or whatever you call it, the juxtaposition of the word Lahaki Reini and Nochriya, which have the same shorish in Hebrew.
Interesting. I never saw that before. That's very interesting.
Right.
And they're kind of opposites.
Yeah, right.
They're opposites, but they're
both in the Nun Chafresh.
Right, yeah. It's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But they're the flip of each other. It's very interesting. Very interesting.
Why did she use the word maybe because of this reason, but why did she use Nochriya? I mean,
what should she say?
She could have said she was a Moviyar, or she could have said she was a Gioret or something. But Nochriya means that she is a stranger. I mean, she's
what she
felt. That's how she felt, I think. Yeah, she felt very removed, very estranged from everyone else around her.
She didn't feel like a Jew.
Right, she really didn't. And we're still at the point where people thought you couldn't marry a Moabite convert. So right, she really felt, you know, outside of it all. She knew that she's joining the Jewish people, but no one's going to even marry her. And then she felt very, very removed. She felt very, very foreign. So that was the feeling Rus had. So we see the humility of Rus, that she didn't see the greatest of her act, and we see how great she felt that this great man came and recognized her and gave her special treatment. So that is verse 10. Let's see verse 11. Boaz replied and said to her, I have been fully informed of all that you have done for your mother-in-law. So he knew the story. Like we said, everyone knew the story.
Yes,
after the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and the land of your birth and went to a people you had never known before. So Boaz says, I see your greatness. And if you look at the wording used here, it's actually reminiscent of Avraham Avinu. It says that you've left Avich v'imeich v'eretz moladteich. So when Avraham's told in Lech Lecha to go, leave your land, Beis Avicha, Moladteicha, right, the same wording used. And what she did was actually an act similar to Avraham's act. And in some ways, I mean, her act was on a different level because Avram was commanded by Hashem to leave, and she did it on her own right.
And
her
Avram
own volition.
Went with all his family. Was
right,
so
she left
lonely.
Everything
she's
behind.
Alone.
Right, she's alone. I guess she had Nami and he had Sarah, but besides that, right. So what she did was an act on the level, in many ways, of Avram Avinu. And we know Abraham, the Lech Lecha is one of Abraham's great 10 trials, and Abraham's looked at as such a special role model because he was able to leave everything behind in order to join, to follow Hashem and go to the land of Israel. And Ruth did the same thing. She left behind her whole background, her family, her friends, her money, her power, everything that she had back there, just to join, as the Pasuk says, and went to people you had never known before, to join a nation which you're clueless about. And you did it all to help your mother-in-law and to join a people. May Hashem reward your actions and may your payment be full from Hashem, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge. So Boaz then blesses her and says that may God repay you for all your great deeds. But it's pointed out in this blessing, it's a double blessing. May Hashem reward your actions and may your payment be full from Hashem. So there's a double wording over here. And the question is, what are the two different blessings being given? May your actions be rewarded, may your payment be full. So the Malbim explains a very, very powerful point. The Malbim says that there's a reward you get for specific actions. You know, Ruth did some amazing things. She helped her mother-in-law, did chesed, she followed the halacha properly, she went through a proper conversion. Now she did certain acts which deserve reward. But then he says that your greatest reward, may your payment be full, because you have come to seek refuge under Hashem's wings. And the idea being that the very status that you've gained from everything you've done, that itself serves as a tremendous reward. I mean, we can reward your actions, but the greatest reward is that you're now a Jew. There's no greater reward than that. You know, your status, what you've achieved through everything that you've done, that privilege you have to serve God as a Jew with that commitment, everything else follows from that. And that's the greatest blessing one can achieve. So we're told that she definitely gets rewarded for her specific actions, but we recognize as well the commitment that I'm going from being a Gentile to a Jew. Now I'm serving Hashem with full sincerity and commitment. That from that comes all blessing. The sages tell us as well when it says Machskorteich Shlema, that your payment shall be full. They say there's a reference here Shlema to Shlomo, to King Shlomo, King Solomon, because we know that her great great grandson will be Shlomo HaMelech. And it's as if Boaz is telling her, your actions are so great, you're going to merit to give birth to Shlomo HaMelech, who's going to be the one to build the Beis HaMikdash and to be one of the paradigms of a Jewish leader throughout all history. And that's how great her actions really were. And the rabbis point out as well, it says you've come to take refuge under God's wings. The rabbis say that this decision to have this lifestyle, the refuge you get is the highest form of refuge. Meaning you don't get refuge out under anybody's wings. You know, it's not you get under a house or a hut or a fortress or an angel. The protection you get is straight from God. You've come, you came to take refuge under God's wings, and that's where you've gone. You've risen above this world, above the physical, above the fray of everyday life, and you get to have the highest level of protection possible straight under God's wings. That's what he tells us. So this is a very powerful blessing. And for us, the message is that we have to look at our lives, you know, from two perspectives. We do a lot of good deeds, and that itself gets rewarded. But we have to recognize the biggest reward possible comes through our sincere commitment. It's not the deeds in and of themselves. It's the fact that I'm committed to God, and I value the privilege of being a Jew and serving God as a Jew. That's something that's so powerful. The greatest blessings come from that commitment, that sincerity. I'm not always from the specific actions that I do. So that she gets rewarded for her actions, but the full payment comes from the ultimate commitment to take refuge under God's wings. That's what he tells her. Let's do one more verse, and we'll stop with this. Then she said, "May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord, because you've comforted me, and because you've spoken to the heart of your maidservant, though I am not even as worthy as one of your maidservants." So Ruth, again, in her humility, says, "In everything you said is beautiful, I still don't feel worthy of this treatment." That's how humble she is. So even after Boaz has blessed her, extolled her virtues, told her about you're destined to give birth to Shlomo and to the Mashiach, and you're such an amazing woman and does such amazing things, she doesn't take anything, you know, nothing boosts her ego. She doesn't become arrogant from him. She says, I'm unworthy, thank you for your blessings, and soon she'll go back to collecting her leket once again. She's not gonna say, oh, in that case, you know, pay up. You know, she could have said that. Where's the money? Where's the check? You know, if I'm so great. She didn't do that. She said, thank you very much, I'm unworthy of your blessings. And she went back to acting like any other poor lady out in his fields. So every single verse we read is showing us how great Ruth is, how humble she was, and how even though the men around did not value her, Boaz, who had a much broader vision and a much deeper sense of what greatness is, he truly valued her. Another point is pointed out just from this entire discussion is that Ruth is being noticed based on her small deeds. You know, the way she spoke, the way she collected her leket, she followed the details of the halacha. And it's been said many times, many commentaries, you know, dating back to the Medrash, that you know, God sees our greatness very often in our small actions. It says that Moshe was only spoken to by God through prophecy after he cared for the sheep. I mean, Moshe, we already read about in the Torah, at the beginning of Moshe's life, that he saved a Jew from death at the hands of an Egyptian. He broke up that fight. He went into the well and saved the lives of all these girls from being tormented. Those are big heroic actions. But God didn't speak to Moshe yet. Then Moshe goes out to be a shepherd and care for sheep. And Moshe cared for the sheep with compassion and honesty, which seems to us to be a very, very small deed. And that's when God spoke to Moshe. And from there, the sages tell us that when God tests a person really on the small actions. I mean, all of us, when we do something great and heroic, you know, we feel good about ourselves. Everyone gives us honor and praise. And, you know, it's easy for a one-time shot to push ourselves with the adrenaline pumping and do something amazing. But in everyday life, when it comes down to the small details, how careful are we? Are we kind and compassionate to our close friends and family? Are we honest, you know, in everyday transactions? Do we commit ourselves in ways which are not going to go unnoticed? The small things. And that's where God sees greatness in a person. And the great actions are obviously important and very, very, and they do a lot for the world. But a person's greatness is measured not by the great actions they do, but by their small everyday deeds. So Ruth did some great things as well, but in this chapter, she's being noticed not for those great things, but for her small actions. You know, her responses that she makes, the way she speaks, her humility, the way that she bends down to get leket in a very, very humble and modest way, and the way that she is careful with very, very small details of halacha. Can I take this grain or not? It's one little tiny wheat kernel, and it might be worth only a nickel, but she's going to make sure that everything she does is perfectly honest based on the halacha, or else she's not going to do it. So for us also to focus on these small things in life, that's where the true greatness lies. It's not in the big acts, it's in the small everyday deeds which show a great person.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.